Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
It's the Search Update.
All right, Search Update. We'll get you up to speed on the Texans here and their head coaching search. Jim Caldwell, according to Mike Florio, buzz in NFL circles. Is it his candidacy to be the next Texans head coach? Picking up steam. We'll get to that in more detail in just a second. The other candidates whose names surfaced yesterday that the team is reportedly going to be interviewing, Leslie Frazier, currently the Buffalo Bills defensive coordinator, head coach of the Minnesota Vikings from 2011 to 2013. And then David Culley, who is a name that I did not know he existed until yesterday. He is the wide receivers coach and passing game coordinator for the Baltimore Ravens. And when you can get the passing game coordinator for the passing game that generated the least number of passing yards in the league this year, you run. You don't walk to go get him. You run.
Wait
to
a
go
second.
Get him. Yeah, 171 yards a game through the air.
Well, would that not balance out perhaps a little bit of what ails the Texans, Sean? We're too good at passing and not good at running. So there you go. No better way to get, you know, even that balance out than to just, you don't need to get better at running the ball. Just get worse at passing. So the balance is better. Yeah. Like, you got to have a ratio,
Seth,
you know?
There's like a 15% chance that that's the thinking behind this right now. Don't joke about this.
Jeez.
There's a non-zero chance that that's the thinking behind. We need to get more balance. Well, let's get worse at passing the football. That'll balance things out.
That's like me like getting hired to be the sexual endurance coach or something,
right,
after clearly being the worst at it.
Right, right. That's like the old saying, you don't need to lose some weight, you just need to gain some height, you know? Other coaching news, real quick, because Seth, this has a tangential tie to you in a way, and I want to get to Jim Caldwell here in a second, but this is coaching news that I think could impact the Texans. One, Doug Peterson's on the market. He was fired by the Eagles yesterday. And there are a lot of, I heard a lot of talk yesterday, should the Texans hire Doug Peterson? Doing a show with you, I know that the main thing in hiring Doug Peterson could be, and you don't maybe not need Doug Peterson to do this, but if Doug Peterson got hired here, I'm guessing this could be a likelihood. A lot of people may not know the name Jeff Stoutland. He's the offensive line coach in Philadelphia who has transcended multiple head coaches there. He's been with multiple head coaches in Philly, which is always a great sign as how good a position coach the guy is. He was on the staff at Cornell when you were there, and he's thought to be one of the best offensive line coaches in football.
He was actually, and now, yeah, before anybody turns your nose up at that, that was his first job as an offensive line coach. He'd been an offensive coordinator for a small school, I believe, before that. But that was his first time as an offensive line coach back in 1996 or so. And then he went on to get some better jobs and then ended up at Alabama, and then Chip Kelly hired him out of Alabama, and he's widely regarded as one of the best offensive line coaches in the league. When you watch his offensive lines play, when they're not decimated by injuries like they have been, but when he's got a bunch of healthy starting offensive linemen there, they work in unison. They execute some of the harder blocks to pull off that involve both power and deception really, really well. They just look like a well-coached offensive line. That part intrigues me. If only Doug Peterson brought along Jeff Stoutland, that would get me really, really excited. The flip side of that coin is, all right, Carson Wentz is a mess. Just an absolute disaster. And it's not just the talent or lack of talent around him. I get that part of it. But if he had taken a step back and perhaps just wasn't the same guy because of the talent around him, then you might say, all right, let's make that excuse. But at times this year, he just looked completely lost. Then he got it together, kind of, but he doesn't look like the same guy. I got to figure out why that is, because your retired quarterback head coach would seemingly be the guy that you would hope would prevent all of that from happening. And then he and Carson Wentz they've got a dicey relationship, but I'm not clear on whether that predated Carson Wentz also sucking. Yeah. You know, Carson Wentz is all put out because Jalen Hurts is, you know, supplanted them this year.
Yeah.
But I don't know if that's before or after all this.
Failure can be poison. There's no doubt about that. Here is Cal McNair sitting down with Mark Vandermeer saying the qualities that this team is going to have in its next head coach.
This guy's different. This guy's different from Nick. I don't know if you can tell, but Nick's a little more introverted, if you will. And I'm a little bit introverted, if you will. But the head coach will not be the introvert. The head coach will be the one that will be really communicating our message, communicating our vision, and that's the person the fans will see the most. And so they'll gravitate towards him. The team, he'll be constantly talking to the team and explaining that vision and communicating those things. And he'll be the leader of our group, the leader of men. And, hopefully, he'll give a speech and they'll all want to run through the brick wall for him.
So there you go. That's Cal's description. Seth, in light of the, I say news, really rumor yesterday that Jim Caldwell's name could be picking up steam here. I think Caldwell's a decent candidate. Feels like a bit of a retread. If we knew that was the definitive profile of the head coach that the Texans are looking for or may have already identified, may or may not, does Jim Caldwell fit that description for you?
I don't think so, and that's not a knock on Caldwell.
Right.
I don't think Tony Dungy fits that description.
Mm-hmm.
But I would take Tony Dungy as a coach. Not right. Oh boy. I just realized.
Do you go from being an ad hoc committee member to being the head coach of the Texans?
Are we going to be watching a clip of him talking to Dan Patrick, saying the radio host, not the governor,
right.
And saying, actually, it turns out I am the head coach of the Houston Texans. I didn't even know. I get this call from Cal McNair, and he said, so when do you want to show up?
Right.
And I said, show up for what? He's
right.
Like, oh, I forgot to tell you. You're the new head coach.
Yeah, no,
Houston
ad hoc committee is actually the new buzzword for the coaching staff. That's what they're calling the flat organizational structure is now the ad hoc committee. Yeah.
So I think Caldwell is not the slug of a personality that a lot of memes would lead you to believe. Caldwell, because he's got a certain demeanor and a calm, a placid demeanor on the sideline, people kind of see these photos and they think that he's less animated than he actually is. But I don't think he's this, fire-breathing dude that gets that sounds like the guy that Cal was talking about. And I also, look, frankly, I just don't believe this report.
Yeah.
I think the report, I call it a report. It wasn't even really a report. This is all that Florio said, quote, "A buzz is building in league circles that Caldwell could be the next coach in Houston," unquote. Like, all right, I don't know what that means. That's like a bunch of guys just sitting around saying, like, you know what? It would make sense if it was Caldwell.
How would you feel if it was Caldwell?
I wouldn't be, like, up in arms irate about it. I wouldn't be excited about it. But I think there's always two things, right? There's the head coach and there's the offensive coordinator. As an offensive coordinator, people in Houston might not even realize he worked with a fella named Peyton Manning, did quite well with Peyton Manning. And then when he became the head coach, had a good year, one good year with Peyton, and then he had the non-Peyton Manning year as a head coach. So you go 2-14 because one of the best quarterbacks in the history of the game is out, and that was kind of it for Caldwell. So he also was the guy that took over offensive coordinating duties in the middle of the Ravens' most recent Super Bowl, and kind of gave Joe Flacco the best stretch of football that Joe Flacco has ever played in his entire life. So he's a great offensive mind. The question is, okay, there are a lot of great offensive minds who aren't great head coaches. Is the second time around for him going to be where he learned the lessons and turns it into something different?
I'm at the stage where all that matters is, does Deshaun Watson like him? That's where I am with this whole thing right now. That's where the Texans have me, Seth. I can't even look at all the different facets of a resume and the background, the vibe, the ethos of a guy. Does Deshaun Watson like him? Does Deshaun Watson approve? Then cool. I'm good with Jim Caldwell. I think Deshaun Watson might like Jim Caldwell. Orlovsky played for Caldwell in that second season you're talking about, in that non-Peyton Manning season in Indianapolis. Orlovsky loved the guy. Yeah. And you know, when I talked to him, he said he thinks he'd be great for Deshaun Watson. It's really hard to find a player that played for Jim Caldwell that didn't like or love Jim Caldwell. His players really, really liked him.
We're talking to Glover Quinn at 9 a.m.?
9 a.m., yep.
Talking to Glover Quinn, a much-beloved Houston Texan that never should have been ejected for Ed Reed. And he played for Caldwell as well, so we'll talk to him later.
For 4 years. All right, let's go to the phone, 713-572-4610. A lot of stuff popping that you guys want to get in on. Let's go to Pasadena. Started off with Anthony in Pasadena. Anthony, welcome into Payne and Pendergast. Good morning.
Man, good morning, gentlemen. Let me say that I love you guys. The show is my first time calling.
Oh, welcome in. We appreciate you.
In the morning, man. Yeah. I listen to you guys all the time. But I'm coming in hot, and I'm coming in quick because I know y'all got other callers. So to the texter who said something about Tua Gua and got doggone David Smith or something like that, no. That's a negative. That's a negative pop. Go ahead and turn in your cards. We don't want that. Tampa Bay, Green Bay, base, yes, they need to call about Deshaun Watson. I understand that, Sean, you don't want them or whatnot, or excuse me, I'm sorry, I don't know if it was Sean or Pendergast, I'm sorry, gentlemen, I don't know which one of you said it, but Tampa Bay, Green Bay, they need to call it. They need to call Houston and see what they need to do to get Deshaun Watson because they both have veterans who are old and they can retire at any second and they're both going to the Hall of Fame. So, yes, you need to call in and call in quick to see what you need to get to Deshaun Watson. I'm going to hang up and listen.
All right, thanks, Anthony. Don't be a stranger. We appreciate you calling and appreciate the kind words.
Sean, that is one of the other factors is, hey, Deshaun has the no-trade clause. He can shut down a trade. So it's not as simple as, oh, just trade Deshaun Watson to the highest bidder. It's got to be somewhere where he would want to go. And I'll remind everybody right now, there are zero credible reports that Deshaun Watson wants to get traded or is asking for a trade. Like zero. So nobody of any consequence is claiming that Deshaun wants to get traded. So if a trade scenario were proposed and the Texans, God help us, wanted to trade him, I think it probably would have to be a place like either Miami, which reportedly Deshaun would be cool with. Tampa makes sense. Especially because you know who loves Bruce Arians is Tyrann Mathieu.
Their time in Arizona.
Yeah. So, I think that's possible. But this is what I'll say. I'll say it all day. It's January 12th. Deshaun Watson's trade value will not decrease one bit between now and September.
No. not a
it just
bit.
Won't. No. There is no hurry on any of this. You've got 9 months in which you can change things, you can smooth things over, you can maybe fire certain people in the front office. You've got 9 months, and Deshaun Watson's value will never decrease in that time. There's no urgency on trading Deshaun Watson. If you've even got that little sliver of an idea in your head, anybody in the Texans front office, you've got 9 months. Stop it. Slow down. You could conceive a child today and have that child before you would even have to really consider trading Deshaun Watson.
Okay, there's going to be a slew of kids born 9 months from today named Deshaun or Deshauna, one of the
or
two.
Or DaBaby, because then you might gain the favor of James Harden, too.
There you go. All right, Ross Tucker is going to join us at the bottom of the hour. We'll get his take on all this craziness going on with the Texans right now. Ultimately, the Texans' biggest mistake that they're making with Deshaun Watson might be this. We'll tell you what it is next. Payne and Pendergast with you on a Tuesday. Good to be with you. Ross Tucker is going to join us at the bottom of the hour. Here was Deshaun Watson a week ago yesterday on Eric Bieniemy and what he thinks of Eric Bieniemy.
I haven't met. I probably met him, I think, through passing Eric. I think after a couple games we played the Chiefs. Haven't really sat down or been around him too much, but I heard nothing but great things about him. So, you know, we'll see where that go. But, yeah, I heard nothing but great things from you know, coach and all the players in the KC about Eric.
Okay, so that was Deshaun about a week ago. It's interesting because about a month before that, when the Texans were in the midst of their 4-12 season, and the head coaching search was just as big a topic as the season itself. Deshaun was asked about Eric Bieniemy. He played much more coy during the season than he did in his postseason press conference, Seth. He was like, no, I've never talked to anybody about Bieniemy. I've watched him, but as it turns out, he's definitely talked to people about Eric Bieniemy. And in fact, Patrick Mahomes was on our sister station, which also happens to be 610, up in Kansas City on the afternoon show yesterday. And he talked openly about talking about Eric Bieniemy with Deshaun Watson.
I've known Deshaun for a while now, and we just talked about Coach Bieniemy, but it wasn't me trying to get him a job or anything like that. I just told him who Coach Bieniemy is and what type of man he is, what type of coach he is, and I think that handles itself. And I think you'll see that as we go on this run here, and then as he gets a job over these next few weeks, months, whatever it is, the type of man he is will carry him to where he needs to be at. And I think that's going to put him in the best situation possible at the end of the day.
Seth, we don't know because we haven't heard anything from Deshaun Watson yet directly. It's all just been rumor, innuendo, and smoke. How big a mistake do you think the Texans are making by not even paying any attention to Eric Bieniemy? Not being the one team that isn't even doing a Zoom interview with the guy?
I think that it's a big mistake, and it has nothing to do with Deshaun Watson and it being a big mistake, I think. It's in just a matter of checking off all your boxes at the very least. Maybe you don't – if you don't think that you can gain anything by talking to Eric Bieniemy, maybe picking his brain a little bit or just seeing what kind of a guy he is. And I think most importantly, if you're not open to being surprised, perhaps, by Eric Bieniemy, then I have to question what level of arrogance is – making you do make that decision to not, and I'm always curious about Robert Saleh too. And that's just on the actual substantive side. Maybe they have valid reasons in their own minds for not wanting to interview Eric Bieniemy. I think that there's at the very least something to managing perceptions and managing the expectations of your players and what have you, and that. It's not always just a matter of, hey, you're going to do what you're going to do and you don't have to worry about anything else. People are watching. People are paying attention. And I just don't get. I don't understand that part about it. I don't understand not interviewing Robert Saleh. Unless there's the report that Eric Bieniemy just flat out didn't want to come coach with Houston, which is concerning in its own right. So I don't know whether to believe that or not. Christian Foria, the old Patriots tight end, said that Eric Bieniemy didn't want anything to do with the mess down in Houston. Joe Hughley asked some people in Kansas City about that, and he didn't find anybody that was saying that. So I don't know what to make of that. But it's worth mentioning, too, that Matt Eberflus decided to not get interviewed by the Houston Texans. The number of name candidates, like the guys, because we've interviewed several guys now. In terms of guys that are going to have multiple options,
Joe Brady. That's it.
Joe Brady's one request is that he gets to talk to Deshaun Watson,
which is smart.
Yeah, that's very smart.
Yeah.
You had a personnel executive tell you that multiple GM candidates for the Texans told Cal McNair that they would fire Jack Easterby if they got the job.
Correct.
And then you heard that from a longtime NFL personnel executive.
Right. That's right.
So I don't – the perception – and this is, again, with the Texans in managing perception. Perception is reality when it comes to certain things. And you in the front office might be thinking, well, these reports are spurious. None of this is true. Candidates out there apparently believe or at least are curious about some of the claims. Texts I get from people are people that are establishing the NFL are curious about what the hell is going on in Houston. That's a lot different than people being curious about some of these other places. This is a level of like, oh boy, wait a second. Do I even want to get involved in this soap opera over here? Because it's a soap opera. Whether you think it's justified or not, it is a soap opera. And people genuinely, Sean, it's like going out with a crazy person. If you know the person's crazy, unless they're extraordinarily hot, you're going to think twice about getting involved with that person. Mm. Especially like, let's say your object of your affection is some young woman who lives with her family, and they're all crazy. The father's a whack job.
Yeah.
These physically threatening you, cleaning his gun when you come over and everything. Yeah. She better be worth it, right?
Right.
So the question is Deshaun Watson hot enough to merit, you know, a psychotic situation? But Deshaun, you know.
He's smoking hot. As quarterbacks go, he's smoking hot. But boy, the balance sheet is really, really starting to tip the scales here.
You know what it is? You know what it is? Let's say you're and I'm not being like misogynist with it, but I'm just thinking about myself.
Right.
So if I had the options, if I were a young single man and I might be interested in this woman, but it turns out that her ex is just like psychotic, and like overprotective of the kids. He's gonna, you know, he's calling me up and telling me, you know, stay away from my kids, stuff like that. Before I get in too deep with that person, I'm probably going to think a few thoughts about it, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's what some people are looking at the Texans as right now.
I would back away from that if I were you. You would have options. You're a handsome man with a good personality. I would stay away from that. See, well, you're married right now, so I would definitely stay away from that situation right now.
What if Bill O'Brien is the psychotic ex, too? What if we make it even more like of a literal translation? So what if Jim Caldwell's getting hang-ups? People are calling, hanging up. Or somebody with like the Alabama fight songs playing in the background.
Let's go to the phones. 713-572-4610. Ross Tucker's going to join us in a few minutes. To LaPorte, we go, and Stacy. Stacy, you're up on Payne and Pendergast. Good morning.
Good morning, guys.
How's it going?
Well, after I heard that the Texans are interviewing a pass coordinator from Baltimore, I don't know anymore. I do like to say that the problem starts and stops with management. And what Seth said about perception is real. When things are, everything is a reaction to an action. And what's going on right now is everybody is reacting to the actions that are coming out of the management office of the Texans. And that is starting and stopping with Cal McNair. And that's all that we can do is go off of what's coming out of there. And yeah, I am all for Nick Caserio. There is not, hands down, not one other man that could be qualified enough to come in here to right the ship. Mm. Albeit Jack Easterby needs to get out of the way. But Cal McNair needs to have his man card pulled. Him and Deshaun Watson. Because both of them are not stepping up into the light. And they're pulling Jack Easterby's right now. They've done ghosted. They're not stepping up and being a man and saying, hey, look, this needs to be squashed. This needs to be cleared up. This isn't what I meant. This needs to be stopped. This needs to be righted right here.
Stacy, let me jump in there because we're up against the bottom of the hour. Appreciate the phone call. The Cal McNair stuff, Seth, there's a lot of people that feel that way about Cal McNair right now. I think the more interesting thing that Stacy just said was the part about Deshaun and Cal both not stepping up. I think I think Stacy's in the minority with that feeling right now, but I do wonder, as long as it's Deshaun's camp and not Deshaun directly addressing any of this, do you think that there ends up being some backlash down the road for Deshaun if he just sort of sits there letting other people kind of do his bidding and putting that smoke out there as opposed to stepping up and speaking about this?
I think it's like anything else in life. There's always going to be a certain amount of backlash from anybody that does anything.
Yep.
You know, you can donate $20 million to charity and there's going to be some kind of backlash in some corner of the internet.
Right.
But I don't think in this situation, because the organization has rightfully been painted as inept in a lot of capacities, because they have been for the last 18 months. It's just been bad decision after bad decision. So I think most people look at it and think, well, for one, and this is the important thing. This is the really important thing. If Deshaun Watson wants to stay on the right side of fan perception, he hasn't requested a trade. He hasn't asked for a trade. He hasn't demanded a trade.
I'm glad keep pointing that out.
There's not one credible report that says he wants to be traded. He wants things fixed. He wants things better. He wants things right. His interests are aligned with fans. You know, usually when there's a contract dispute, the fans' interests are actually aligned with the owners. In this situation, his interests are aligned 100% with the fans. So I don't think he'll lose fan support.
Ross Tucker is our radio.com NFL insider. And, of course, his insider calls are brought to you by Mercedes-Benz. Drive a Mercedes-Benz van and find out how far an extra mile really goes. We'll get Ross Tucker's thoughts on the Deshaun Watson situation. And he's close to the Eagles. He lives up in Philadelphia What kind of candidate is Doug Peterson for a head coaching opening now that he's available? We'll talk to Ross Tucker next. Payne and Pendergast with you on a Tuesday. It's Tuesday, 7:30-ish, so that can mean only one thing. On the line is our radio.com sports NFL insider, Ross Tucker. Insider calls brought to you by Mercedes-Benz. Drive a Mercedes-Benz van and find out how far an extra mile really goes. Check out Ross's daily betting podcast, Bet Sweats, live every weekday from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. Houston time on radio.com as we welcome in Ross Tucker. So, Ross, we've been talking about the impressions from outside of Houston about what's going on in Houston right now. I guess just tell us from where you sit right now, what do you think of this soap opera we got going on down here? Pretty good stuff, huh?
Yeah, I mean, the national impression is that it's a total and complete mess.
Yeah, that's accurate.
I don't, you know, you guys are there, so you would know more than me. I know I have Andrew Brandt, the former Packers executive, on the Ross Tucker podcast every Wednesday, and he even said last week, like, what is going on there? I mean, look, no matter how you slice it, even if they are making good decisions, the process is flawed, right? You know, by all accounts, they hire this firm who gives them five candidates, then they go outside of what the search firm wanted. So that was just a waste of money, the search firm was. What was the point of that? And then they clearly, you know, you see some of these stories from back in October, they clearly engaged Deshaun Watson in some way or led him to believe that he was going to be part of the process or have input, and then they don't take his recommendations seemingly at all. The one I really don't understand is it's clear that he would like Bieniemy to be the coach. And Bieniemy gets an interview with every franchise other than Houston. Like, if I have a fact wrong, please let me know. But that almost feels like spiteful. Like that almost feels like, we want to show you that we're in control. You're not, Deshaun, and we're not going to interview this guy just because you want us to. Like, am I missing something?
Well, I would say, I know, and the way you phrased it is that he would like Bieniemy to be the coach. I don't think that it's clear that's Deshaun's first choice or anything. He's been asked about Bieniemy, and he said nice things about Bieniemy. So I don't know exactly about, like, Deshaun's preference, but you're right that I think he has a high opinion of Bieniemy, and I think he would totally 100% be cool with Bieniemy being his coach. But I agree with you otherwise that, I don't understand what the harm would be in requesting an interview from Eric Bieniemy. I guess the question I'd have for you, Ross, because you've got perhaps a clearer vision of the way the Texans are perceived, is this going to start to be an issue with coaches and whether they even bother interviewing with the Texans? Because Matt Eberflus declined to be interviewed. Joe Brady reportedly wants to talk to Deshaun Watson as part of the interview. And a lot of the hotter candidates, so to speak, aren't getting interviewed by the Texans right now.
I think you guys are probably pretty far down the list now in terms of where guys would want to go with the openings, which is really a shame and not the way it should be. Because you're talking about a franchise that's been a winner. You know, they've been a perennial winner over the last 5-10 years. They've had a decent amount of success, you know, in the J.J. Watt era, if you will. They have a franchise top five quarterback. There's no state income tax. It's a winnable division. They're not like, you know, in the AFC West with the Chiefs or whatever. There should be a lot going for the Texans. But the Easterby weirdness, the Deshaun Watson situation, the ownership issues, it just feels like, man, I'd much rather – that place is a mess. I'd much rather go to Jacksonville or the Chargers or now maybe even Philadelphia, where I believe that the Texans should be, you know, in the top three or four of the now seven openings. – Yeah, I think they should be like ahead of the Jets or ahead of the Eagles, maybe even because they got Deshaun Watson.
Yeah.
But I'm just not sure that that's the case.
Ross, if you were a general manager, would you entertain at all Deshaun Watson trade offers?
If I was Caserio?
Yes.
Yeah, I think I would always entertain it.
What would it take?
I think it's highly unlikely that I would trade him. But if he's not answering my calls and won't talk to me, you know, then you realize, okay, we can probably come back from this, but doesn't seem like it's going to be that easy. Like, doesn't seem like that's going to be that smooth. We have, guys, I was just about to say we have the third pick in the draft. I'm so sorry.
Well, Ross, they could have the third pick in the draft if they trade Deshaun Watson to the Miami Dolphins.
I know. No, it's so funny. It's funny. Gosh, can you imagine how much better of a position you'd feel like they were in if they did? You know, you could trade Deshaun Watson and use the third pick on whoever you want at quarterback and then get a boatload of picks. But, no, I think I would entertain it. Just because he seems really upset about it. Plus, like, I think we know what teams are willing to give up to move up to the number one pick and get Jared Goff or move up to the number two pick and get Carson Wentz. Now, I realize the finances are different, but what is it? What are you willing to trade to move to get Deshaun Watson, who's a known top five quarterback, as opposed to the unknown of Goff and Wentz? Guys like that, neither one of which right now are even top 10 quarterbacks, I would think you're talking three first-round picks. But the key is, I think, is it's got to be high. Like, one of them's got to be high so that you can draft your next quarterback in the top 10 this year. Like, that would be important to me. And you'd have to really feel good about Fields or Zach Wilson or Trey Lance or whoever it is.
Ross Tucker joining us on the program. Ross, who says no to this one? Jacksonville trading the number one overall pick to the Texans for Deshaun Watson.
That straight up trade is interesting. I think I would say I don't think Jacksonville would do it. I think I understand that Watson's a known commodity, but there's a lot of value in getting Trevor Lawrence for like $35 million over the next 5 years,
yeah,
as opposed to Deshaun Watson for $40 million a year for like two more years, right? So I think Jacksonville says no is the answer.
Yeah.
Ross, it's just everything's so weird right now. Up is down, down is up. Normally, in this situation, after you hired a GM, I think people would have been excited about Nick Caserio. They would have been skeptical of the New England connection, except that he makes sense, you know? So if there weren't all this drama with Deshaun being disgruntled, I think the biggest topic around here would probably be, okay, what's going to happen with J.J. Watt? He's got a $17.5 million cap figure, 1 year remaining, $17.5 million non-guaranteed, 100% non-guaranteed. What happens with J.J. Watt? If you had to predict it right now, what would you say J.J. Watt is doing 2 months from now?
Traded.
Yeah.
I'd be very surprised if he's not traded. Look, Caserio was in New England when I was there, and the one thing he learned from Belichick is – you got to get value for these guys while you can. And I think he realizes, you know, they need to kind of change the culture and change the leadership there. And as long as JJ's there, it's kind of JJ's team. You know, I was surprised when the Patriots cut Lawyer Malloy. He came to Buffalo when I was there. I was surprised when they moved on from Richard Seymour. But that was probably end up being a good trade. For the Patriots, you know, I think J.J. Watt's traded. I think he still has some value. There will be championship caliber teams that will want his ability as a rusher and as a player still and leader and believe he can help get them over the top. The Texans are not there. The Texans would like to – I mean, honestly, it seems like a trade would be best for everybody. It feels like at this point J.J. Watt even kind of wants a trade.
Yeah, I think that especially just given where JJ is in his career, and Ross, you watch that defense. There's so little talent on it. And I'm watching the second half of the Titans game. Almost every single run except for two, I think, every running back run went directly away from JJ Watt. And I don't see that changing a whole lot. I think that either Green Bay or Pittsburgh might end up being nice destinations for JJ, depending on if they can get the money right.
Oh, man, I didn't even think about that. Either go back home to Green Bay, that's amazing, and he fits in that defense, or get to play with his brothers in Pittsburgh. Dude, love where your head's at, Seth. That would be, and he would be the type of guy that I almost feel like, well, maybe not, but maybe he'd be willing to take a little bit less to have either one of those two situations happen.
Hey, Ross.
Yeah, have like a postseason incentive or something. Sorry, go ahead, Sean.
No, I was just going to say, Ross, before we let you go, I do want to get your thoughts on Doug Peterson, the Philadelphia situation, because Doug Peterson is now available. The Eagles fired him yesterday, and his name's now going to come up, I would imagine, for some of these head coaching openings, including here. What kind of head coach? Guy just won a Super Bowl 3 years ago. If the Texans, say, were to hire Doug Peterson, would you see that as a good hire?
Slam dunk. Mm. Yeah. I mean, I think he's an awesome coach. I mean, guys, he in his second year as a coach, okay, he had his second year quarterback, Carson Wentz, as the MVP of the league until he got hurt. They had the number one seed. They still went ahead and won the Super Bowl with a backup quarterback in Nick Foles, who, by the way, isn't really that great. I don't know if you guys have watched Nick Foles play. He's really not that great. And he won a Super Bowl, including beating New England. Yeah. Beating Belichick and Casario and Brady and all those. Then the next year, they have a bunch of injuries, including Wentz gets hurt again. They rally. They make the playoffs. They beat the Bears in the playoffs. They probably would have beat the Saints if Alshon Jeffrey doesn't drop that pass. Then the next year, which was last year, you know, they lost almost their whole team. I mean, you know, I do the preseason games for the Eagles.
Right.
The skill guys, the last month of the season for the Eagles last year, was the exact same guys playing in the second half of preseason games. I mean, it was practice squad guy, practice squad guy, practice squad guy, waiver pickup. They win the division. They go to the playoffs again, and then Wentz got hurt. But Jadeveon Clowney, who knows what might have happened? I really don't know what happened this year. I mean, this year was a total disaster. He did not coach well. I've never seen a player regress like Carson Wentz. I don't know what happened there. But the three-year track record and resume before that is extremely impressive. And I talked to the guys, like, they all love Peterson. I love working with Peterson on the preseason. He's just an awesome guy. I think he's a terrific coach. And I think somebody's going to get a very good coach there.
Ross Tucker is our Radio.com Sports NFL Insider. Insider calls brought to you by Mercedes-Benz. Drive a Mercedes-Benz van. Find out how far an extra mile really goes. Check out Ross's daily betting podcast, Bet Sweats, live every weekday, 9 to 11 local time here in Houston on Radio.com. Ross, we appreciate it. Hey, Ross, how did you not wind up on the Nickelodeon broadcast, by the way? I was stumping for you on Twitter over that.
Yeah.
Well, okay, I got to ask you guys this. Yeah. So, obviously, I would love to do that. That'd be great. But why does everybody think I would be – like, what is it about me?
No. Okay,
this is – I'd be good for Nickelodeon. Yeah,
this is not like a knock on your intelligence or anything like that. Ross, you have the exact right personality. I'm guessing kids love you.
Yes.
I'm guessing, like, at Thanksgiving and everything, you probably pay, like, buck and bronco with the kids and stuff. You just have a very animated, engaging way of talking. You talk kind of slow, which is good for kids because they're dumb. And I think you'd be – I think, honestly – That might end up being like the place you could truly shine.
Your niche.
Which would be on like the Nickelodeon NFL broadcast. And then you're winning the hearts and minds of the youth who will then go on to worship you when they became, product purchasing adults. Yes.
Well, first of all, Sean, I appreciate you saying that and your social media support always. And I would love to do that sometime. And I actually watched. Thank goodness they did it for that crappy Bears game because it gave us something to, like, the whole second half. I was like, well, this game's over. Let's watch it on Nickelodeon with my daughters. And it was awesome. It was very entertaining. Like, they don't love football, like, you know, so they might watch 5 minutes with me. with on the Nickelodeon thing, I got them to stay with me for like 20, 25 minutes, and they were asking questions and stuff. So thought it was a huge success. I'd love to do it. I could love calling any game. I'm going up back up to Buffalo this weekend, Saturday night. If you guys are driving around, I'll be doing Bills Ravens, which I actually think is the game of the weekend. I can't wait. Back to back. I thought Bills Colts were going to be the best game. It was. Bills Ravens now is going to be the best game. I can't wait.
Well, yeah, no, and Ross, also, and honestly, I'm being completely serious. When you do color commentary, because I think a lot of people hear you on sideline, if they haven't heard you do color commentary, the thing that you do that I wish more commentators did is that you really enjoy watching the game. Like, you get this sense, like, when listening on the radio especially, I need somebody that makes me feel like I'm having fun. You definitely do that. Yeah. So I encourage everybody to be able to.
So listen, it's a very subjective thing. We know that. My number one thing when I like evaluate abroad, I just want to know that they love it. Like, I just want to be able to hear that they love it. And honestly, like, I never take it for granted. I love it. Look, I said this at the end of that Colts Bills game. I got paid well to do that. Like, what a scam. I got paid to call that. Like, what a scam I got going here. It's amazing.
Yeah, don't tell anybody. We feel similarly about our job. Don't tell anybody, Ross. Don't tell anybody. And Ross, that game that Ross is doing will be right here on our air here on Sports Radio 610 as we carry the NFL playoffs here. Hey, Ross, great stuff as always. We'll talk to you again soon. Appreciate it.
Awesome. See you, dudes.
All right. See ya. Ross Tucker. He's the best joining us here.
That was good stuff about Peterson. It's good to hear somebody from Philadelphia.
With an emphatic endorsement for Doug Peterson.
Yeah, yeah. And to point out exactly what a good coaching job he did last year.
Yeah.
I think we're all hung up on this year and whether it was his fault or not. It was an impressive job doing with a bunch of basically street free agent types.
Let's get to some headlines.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines, brought to you by BaywayJeep.com.
All right, today's headlines, the Texans and their head coaching search. The biggest news item relative to their coaching search is that Jim Caldwell, according to Mike Florio, is starting to get some buzz within league circles as a guy who could wind up getting this job. We'll talk more about that at the top of the hour when we do the search update. There are other names that are getting into the mix as well that we will get into. Let's start with headlines with the college football national title game last night in Alabama and Ohio State. It was a game that was close for a little while, and then like a lot of Alabama games, even against good teams, it wasn't. Alabama eventually took control before halftime. They wore Ohio State down. Justin Fields, you could tell in that game, was not right physically necessarily. He was dealing with a hip injury. So Justin Fields, who just 10 days ago created a narrative where, wow, maybe Justin Fields is the guy who we should be looking at number one overall. Look what he did to Trevor Lawrence's team. I'm not going to say Justin Fields crashed back down to earth. He's still going to be a top five pick in the draft, I would imagine. But it was not a great game for him last night. 52-24, the Ohio State Buckeyes lose to the Alabama Crimson Tide. Devontae Smith, Seth, 12 catches, 215 yards, 3 touchdowns, all in the first half because he suffered a finger injury early in the second half. Didn't matter. Alabama brought the ship right into shore, cruise to victory. From what you've seen of Devontae Smith, I'm guessing, is going to be a top 5, top 10 pick in the draft. Very slight of build, super fast, and a really tough kid.
You know, the slight of build, I don't think matters as much as it used to. And like, in every position across the board, they're kind of breaking paradigms for what you have to be a top guy. Look, Kyler Murray, obviously, is a huge example, as well as many other short quarterbacks. And then with receivers, the fact that so many number one receivers are also being used in the slot a lot. You know, the Texans used DeAndre Hopkins in the slot a lot. And DeSean Jackson kind of broke the mold for a lot of people in there. So I don't worry about size. I've come around on this in like the last 5 or 6 years. I don't worry about undersized people whatsoever. Smart offensive coordinators can figure out a way to use them. Partly because, look, you're not allowed to get hit anymore. It used to, if you were a 165 or 175-pound guy 10 years ago, you might literally lose your entire brain. Like, it might run out one of your ears after you got hit over the middle. It's just not going to happen anymore.
Yeah. A text message, Sean, why did you have to say relative to? I know that's an O'Brienism. That's actually a good segue into our next headline. As we move from Alabama and me saying relative to, this news item has ties to both of those things. Reportedly, Bill O'Brien is going to become the next offensive coordinator at the University of Alabama. The Crimson Tide reportedly honing in on O'Brien to replace Steve Sarkisian, who coordinated his last game offensively last night for the Crimson Tide. He's taking over at the University of Texas. Sarkisian is. So Bruce Feldman of Fox and The Athletic reported right around game time last night that O'Brien Seth was getting close to a deal with Alabama. Something is expected in the next few days. We should point out for people who chuckle and laugh at this and think, oh boy, how's Alabama going to do on opening drives now? I'm guessing they're going to run a lot on second and 10. All those things that you want to joke about with Bill O'Brien, and I was making those same jokes last night. I would remind you that the offensive coordinatorship at Alabama has become the football version of a halfway house, where you've got some sort of downtrodden coach. You know, Lane Kiffin fired at USC on the tarmac by Pat Hayden. He goes to the University of Alabama, yada, yada, yada. He now just got an extension at Ole Miss. Brian Daboll fails as an offensive coordinator in three different places in the NFL. He goes to the University of Alabama in 2017. Yada, yada, yada. Now he's one of the hottest head coaching candidates in the NFL after his offensive coordinator time here in Buffalo. And I would point out Steve Sarkisian was fired at USC for drinking on the job and was fired in Atlanta as the offensive coordinator 2 years ago. He is now going to be the head coach at what is undoubtedly the biggest business of a football program in college football, and one of the blue blood names, at least, the University of Texas. Bill O'Brien is going to succeed at the University of Alabama, Seth.
He'll end up with, I honestly think the best place for him is college. I think he wants to have total control, which in college, every head coach is basically the GM also. You're in charge of everything. You do have to answer to the boosters and the administration, which is a pain in the butt. But I think he ends up as a college head coach somewhere. And would it be in the SEC? I don't know. I think of other successful Yankees that have gone down to Alabama, like Joe Namath. Is Joe Namath, Bill O'Brien, pretty much same personality, right? Same dashing good looks.
Yeah, in fact, there were a lot of people called him Broadway Bill here because he was so flamboyant.
Can you imagine O'Brien same exact guy in a Broadway show?
Broadway Willie. That's right, he wouldn't be Broadway Billy, he'd be Broadway Willie.
By the way, DeVonta Smith, 6'1", 175. That is a slender drink of water.
Yes,
right there.
Yes, he is indeed.
Sean, I always secretly despise the receivers on the team because nobody looks better in a suit than an NFL wide receiver. Because mm-hmm. like these guys, they're muscular, but they're kind of tall and lanky. So like on travel day, I look at like Andre Johnson or Kevin Walter, and you just you kind of see that just what magnificent specimens they are.
They are indeed. You know, I was just thinking, Seth, as we're talking about O'Brien, and we're talking about head coaches, and we're going to talk about where the Texans are with their head coaching search in just a few minutes here at the top of the hour. It's January 12th. Are we surprised that none of the, I guess there's seven openings now. We should point out the Eagles just fired Doug Peterson yesterday. None of the seven teams have pulled the trigger on a hire yet. There's usually, Landry went and got this information last week. You know, the dates on all the hires for the vacancies. And if I'm not mistaken, he went and got the dates for the last 2 years. At least three or four of them are full by now. And there have been no teams to pull the trigger yet, which I guess either means everybody's pursuing guys that are still involved in the postseason, maybe, or...
Yeah, maybe some of the top... Maybe there's kind of a consensus among top candidates. Like, these are the few guys that we really want.
Yeah.
Until those guys commit, that's when the dominoes start to fall.
Yeah.
You know? So, like, I don't know. Let's just say, for the sake of illustration, maybe Robert Saleh is that guy.
Right.
Like, he's the number one guy, and that's who everybody really wants. Until Saleh commits to somewhere, they're going to wait and they're going to hold off, and then there will probably be a flurry. And then I also wonder, maybe it's changed in the last – it's been a couple years now since Josh McDaniels left the Colts in the lurch. Maybe people are being more careful, I guess, about thinking they have a deal with somebody until they're actually able to sign the deal.
Yeah.
Because for those of you who don't know, Josh McDaniels was still in the playoffs. He had verbally agreed to be the coach of the Indianapolis Colts. Some assistant coaches left their jobs to go get to accept the job with the Colts, and then all of a sudden, McDaniels just bailed out.
What a slime ball, dude.
Screwed over all those guys. Matt Eberflus was one of them. He got to keep his job, you know, good for him. But yeah, that's so I wonder, maybe teams are just like, look, until we actually got a signature on paper, I'm not going to claim that we've got anything going.
Hey, by the way, if you're wondering what that might have done to McDaniel's coaching career, he has got no interest from anybody this offseason.
Yeah,
you know, his name still gets thrown in the mix a lot because he's on the Belichick tree and some teams still get snowed into that whole thing. And Seth, if you want an impression of just where McDaniels is on the pecking order for Texan fans, I think when Caserio got hired, Texan fans were terrified that McDaniels could be the guy who's the head coach because the two of them went to college together. Not only worked in the same building together up in Foxborough for two decades, they went to college together at John Carroll University. Just to give you a gauge on where Texan fans are with McDaniels, this is how much they hate him. I put a poll up yesterday to see how bad the Easterby dynamic has gotten. And I asked Texan fans, would you accept Josh McDaniels as the next head coach if, in conjunction with hiring McDaniels, Jack Easterby resigned? So Easterby's gone,
yeah.
But you got to hire McDaniels as the head coach. And I thought for sure that the majority of Texan fans would say, okay, we'll take McDaniels just to get Easterby out of the building. And I don't know what your answer would be to that question, but I was shocked. A majority of the people said no. 62% of the people said no. We'll hang on to Easterby. We don't want anything to do with McDaniels. McDaniels lower than Easterby on the food chain.
Well, I think, though, I guess the way that's phrased, though, is that you're swapping out one for the other. It's not the problem right now, as a lot of people see it, is that, wait a second, you're just importing more of the Patriots way. And Deshaun doesn't seem to be a fan of the Texans' version of the Patriots way. So, what are you really accomplishing if you get rid of one dude for even more? You get one, super cheerful, positive guy, and I don't know if anybody's buying it, for one dour New England type. It almost makes it even worse.
I get it. McDaniels is somebody who's actually been good at a job in the NFL involving actual football. You know what
I mean? That's a good point.
Yeah.
That's good. Instead of being good at everything. Hey, what's Jack Easterby good at anyways? Oh, let me tell you. All this stuff. Yeah, but what specifically? A lot of stuff. I mean, No, I mean specifically. I'm telling you, it's a lot of stuff. Okay, all right.
Well, here's what he's not going to do. That was the answer.
Okay, that's right. That's
Friday
right.
last week. He's not going to do roster and personnel. Yeah. Well, we learned that he's not good at that. Because he was involved in...
I know, Sean. Okay, 6 months ago, what does Easterby do? Boy, he can do it all. Okay, now, what does Easterby do? Well, a lot. But he's not going to do that stuff that he was really, really bad at, okay? We really screwed the pooch on that one, yeah.
God, what a mess.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.